Okay, so we have Halacha Day for Perek Hay of Parshas Vayikra, or Sefer Vayikra. Today is the 30th of November, 2017. Sam's not here, so I don't know the Hebrew date. but we have the following. There's a couple of issues that show up that are actually pretty practical towards the end of the Perek. At the very end of the Perek of the fifth parak starts talking about things that you would bring a korban for, and even things that one would be b'chayiv to bring a korban if you did something by on purpose. So what is one of the examples here? So in Pasuk Chaf Beis, Pasuk Chaf Gimel, Pasuk Chaf Beis says, O matza aveda v'chichishpa v'nishpa al shakir, that if you find something lost... Today is the 12th of Kislev. Okay. So, Omatza Aveda, if you find something lost, V'chichishpa V'nishpa Al Shakir, you deny that you have it and you swear falsely. Alachat V'kol Asher Yaseh Adam Lachato Behina. And you swear falsely about any of the things that a person can do and therefore sinned. Vaya, and also, Kicheteva Hashem, so it will be that when the sin will become guilty, when he realizes he's guilty, V'shivis Hagzela Asher Gazal, that he's going to have to return the stolen object which he stole. Oes Oshek Asher Ashak, or the fraud, or the proceeds of the fraud which he frauded, or the object that was deposited with him, or the lost object which he had. So all of these things are then, he might deny that he has. These are things that he would have something else. He denies he has it. We're going to say you have to swear that you have it, that you don't have it. He swears, and then he realizes he swore falsely. So he is required to give those things back. And to bring a korban asham, and to bring the guilt offering. So, with regards to that, I'm going to speak a little bit about the issue of v'shivas ha-gzela, and by extension, the issue of gzela pachos mishava pruta. What do those terms mean? V'shivas ha-gzela, the mitzvah to return something which you stole. So, what exactly is that mitzvah? It's a very important mitzvah. Comes up a lot in the Gemara, plus it also has a responsibility for something else. Right? If you steal something, you have a mitzvah aseh, you have a positive mitzvah to return it. So, keep in mind when we talk about fulfilling all 613 mitzvos, that's one of the mitzvos that you sort of hope that you're not going to have to fulfill. Right? There's no mitzvah to go ahead and steal things in order so that you'll have the opportunity to be yotzi the mitzvah of returning the stolen object which you lost. Okay, but beyond that, there's a major impact from that came up in Daf Yomi over the last couple weeks, as we've learned the end of Maseches Matos, as well as the beginning of Maseches Shavuos. It shows up there as well. That if a person is, that most mitzvos ases that have an action that are included within it, one is chayiv makos. If you violate it, you're going to be chayiv misa, you're going to be chayiv makos, you're chayiv karis. Possibly two of those, you're chayiv makos and chayiv karis. You're going to be responsible for both. So are you, if you steal something of somebody else, are you chayiv makos? Are you chayiv for lashes for doing so? You have done a mitzvah lo saseh, you've done an obvious negative prohibition. So the answer is no. Why is it that you would not be chayiv for that? So stealing, gazela or gneva, is known as what is the Gemara labels as a lav hanita kliase, a lav that is connected, or a lav that leads, a prohibition that leads to a positive mitzvah. So any prohibition that leads to a positive mitzvah, one is not going to be chayiv makos, one is not going to be chayiv lashes for its violation. So probably because the rectification, if that's a word, is available to you. I mean, the Torah has told us how to rectify it. It hasn't told us to rectify it by giving lashes. It told us rather to rectify it by taking care of it and returning the object to the person who you stole it from. That is,
why'd you steal it in the first place if you're gonna return it?
Why do you steal it in the first place? See, you violated a prohibition. You thought you could take it, and then you couldn't. Now here, if you deny that you have it, so then you're actually chayiv a chomesh, you're chayiv to add on a fifth, which as we pointed out last week is really a quarter, and you're chayiv to add on a korban as well, chayiv korban ashem as well. But if you stole something, and someone says, hey, you stole that from me, so then you return it, and that's all that one has to do. Bruce might think that you know, you should be chayiv for grand larceny, you should be, it's a felony, and you should put on your record, and you should go to jail for 5 to 15 years. So that concept, that might be true, but that's not what the and it could be that a Jewish government, even a Jewish Torah government, might employ such such a punishment. But that's not what the Torah says to do. I mean, the Torah says to do this. That is the base. And then from there, perhaps you would expand to other things if Basin feels the need to do what we call Makin Ve'onshin Shalom Min Adin, to give punishments that are not necessarily according to the halacha, letter of the law. Yeah?
Seems like it encourages stealing.
Right, but you'll never end up in the negative.
Yeah, so I'll steal it. If they ask me, if they say I stole it, I'll return it.
Yeah, so two notes on that. If you steal it, and if you chayv on geneva, so geneva, you're chayv kefel. If you get caught, kefel is doubled, and you have to pay back double that which you stole. And if you stole a ox, a sheep, or a cow, and then you shechted it or sold it, so you would actually be chayv four or five times the amount. But anything else, you only give back that which you stole. So again, whenever these questions come up, and they're going to come up regularly over the course of Vayikra, of, hey, wait a second, that's not fair. People could get away with a lot of things. So there's two answers. First of all, we're talking about Jews, and we hope Jews are honest and good people, and we're just trying to make sure that society stays in order, but we're not really. And the second thing that is important to keep in mind is that Beis Din has the prerogative to makin va'onshin shalom min adin, to give makos or to give punishments that don't necessarily fit within the halacha itself. They have the right to go, and sometimes perhaps even the obligation to go above and beyond the letter of the law. So there are several stories over the course of Maseches Sanhedrin and Maseches Machos where they do that. There is something which was done, and Beis Din goes out and does more than what would seem like from the Torah itself. So while from the Torah itself you require edus, testimony, you require hasra, you require warning, you require all of these things, and they have to be done in a very precise way in order to be chayiv misa according to the Torah. So I would add in, yes, but Beis Din does have the right to use DNA evidence as they see fit, or to use alternative methodologies of evidence gathering that we see fit, besides what's strict in the Torah, as they also, besides having the importance of maintaining Torah law, they also have the responsibility, based on those, of maintaining civil law and order, which these things might be responsible for. Okay? So that's an important idea of the mitzvah of Hishivas HaGzela that actually nullifies the obligation to give makos for simple, plain gezela. Now, there is an interesting gemara. The gemara in Masechta Sanhedrin, Daf Nun Zayin Amar Aleph, is discussing the responsibility and obligation of non-Jews as they pertain to mitzvahs. It discusses the Sheva Mitzvahs Bnei Noach. Also in that area are additional things that non-Jews are not permitted to do. They're not permitted to learn Torah. They're not permitted to do all sorts. They're not allowed to keep Shabbos. So that's sort of the region of Gemara where those mitzvahs are talked about. When I was in Yeshiva, when we were learning Masecha Sanhedrin, so that was the famous year when the cardinals came to visit. So who were the cardinals that came to visit? So they are not the cardinals from St. Louis. They are rather the cardinals, the Rome cardinals that showed up. So I don't know how this really came. I don't know anybody really knows how this really came about. But somehow someone had the idea that the cardinals were interested in seeing what a base medrash should look like, because in Catholic seminaries, so what is the image that one has of a Catholic seminary? So I don't really know what your image is of a Catholic seminary, but it generally is people sitting in the library and studying by themselves, reading by themselves, or sitting in a class and listening to a teacher. And the concept of learning b'chavrusa is a uniquely Torah concept, that two people are going to sit, and two people are going to learn together, and they're going to argue with one another, and they're sitting in a room where there's an extreme amount of noise, and there's fighting, and there's arguing with one another, and then everybody walks out and they're best of friends as soon as the study session is over. So that's like a pretty amazing concept. Certainly if you didn't grow up with that concept, it's a pretty amazing thing. So for some reason somebody made the connection, they're going to come to Yeshiva University and they're going to observe us learning. And I remember that morning, Rabbi Blau, who was the Mashkiach, got up in the middle of morning Seder and said, you should all know that there's going to be some cardinals coming in. They're going to be wearing what they wear. They're going to look a little different, but you know, just they're really coming to watch you, to observe you doing what you do. So just continue doing what you do, and there's no reason that you need to acknowledge them or anything when they come in. So there were about, I don't remember the number, it's like between 30 and 40 cardinals, which is, there's only about 150 of them in total. Yeah. So this is a pretty unique group shows up. And I remember I got up and went to learn, went to get a sefer from the wall. And there's also photographers and journalists and those kinds of things take pictures of this. And one of the...
It's a big mixed matrix?
Yes.
How many students were?
Probably 400.
Wow.
This is the main base madrash at YU. Now there's actually now it's known as the old base madrash because they've built a new one since I've left there. But I would imagine still today there's about 300 students in the old base madrash and several hundred in the new base madrash as well. So there's about 400. It's very, very loud. And went to the wall to get a shelf to the shelf on the wall to get a sefer, and somehow I was confronted with a cardinal from Angola who asked me what I was learning, and it happened to be that we were learning that Gemara, this Gemara about the prohibition of teaching non-Jews Torah. Gosh. So I talked about the issues of the Sheva Mitzvos B'nei Noach, learning about the seven Noachide laws and how those apply to non-Jews, etc. And I was interested in things like that. But anyways, that's my story about learning Daf Nun Zayin Amud Aleph and Masechta Sanhedrin. So over the course of, there are several difficult Gemaras over the course of Sanhedrin. One of them is as follows. The Gemara makes a comment that there is stealing, that somebody who's not Jewish, they actually get executed for theft. So, and then it says as well with regards to Gezel, Ganav v'Gezel, if he stole, robbed, or he took a Yifas Toar, which is, we'll learn about in a couple of months probably, the issue of the captive at war, v'chein ki yotzi ben, similarly, a Kusi, b'Kusi, or b'Kusi b'Yisrael, a Kusi against Yisrael, all of them are going to be Aser. However, v'Yisrael b'Kusi, but Yisrael to do it to a non-Jew, so that's going to be permissible. So the Gemara wants to know, what is this talking about, that stealing is okay, that a Jew is allowed to steal things from a non-Jew, that a non-Jew is not allowed to steal from a Jew. So a Jew is not permitted to just go ahead and take things from non-Jews. So what are we talking about here? So El Amara Papa, Lo Nitzercha Ella, Mipachos B'Shavar Pruta, that if you are taking something that is of value less than a Shavar Pruta. So the Gemara asks, "Ihachi kusi b'Yisrael aser? If so, does a kusi against the Jew why should it be prohibited? Habar mechilahu. So 1 second. So why is that? Why would it be that pachus v'shaver pruta, that if you take less than a pruta? What is a pruta, by the way? Anybody know? So that's actually a question, right? A shaver pruta, or is the minimal amount of money, is the minimal amount of recognized value in halacha. So when you, for instance, be mekadesh a woman, marrying a woman, so it has to be worth more than ipruta. Anything that requires some amount of value is required to be more than a pruta. So how much is a pruta? So there's two ways of understanding it. One way is figure out what a pruta was in the time of the Gemara and how much silver it was, and figuring out what the value of silver is today, and making the equivalent, figuring out what the equivalent is, and therefore it would come out to something in the area of 3.5 sets. The second understanding is whatever the minimal amount of money is that you have in your time and place, which actually has two possible meanings. I mean, what is our minimal amount of value of money that we have in our time and place?
Penny.
A penny, right? So it's either a penny, or it's actually, I saw an idea that it's the minimal amount of money that you could actually purchase something for. So can you actually buy anything for a penny, Bizman Hazeh?
No.
No, you can't. Right? I don't think you can buy a penny. You can get anything for a penny. So you'd have to figure out what is the cheapest, what is the lowest price thing that you could buy, and that would then be the value of a pruta. So you could figure out what that would possibly be today. Or even the meters don't accept pennies, right? So, what?
They're thinking of doing away with
pennies altogether. Yes, I've heard they're thinking about doing away with pennies. As a response, when I heard that, I actually gave a week-long discussion between Mincha Marv about the halachic usages of pennies. That there are several important usages that pennies stand for. But we won't do it now. Pinyon HaBen, it's important, it's good. The good thing about pennies is there's a couple of good things, but the one good thing about the value of pennies is that a penny is actually worth, the value of the penny, the value of the coin itself is actually worth more than a penny. right? Which is why the government might want to get rid of them, because it's not economical. But the value of a penny is worth more than a penny, so which is different than all other coinages. In other coinages, the coin is worth less than the money. If that's the case, the money is not actually money. The money is really just representative of money. Right? And that's going to have some halachic ramifications when you actually need something that is of real value as opposed to of representative value. Right? If you give somebody a check, Harebe Gedesh Zli, becheck zu, so it's unclear whether that's going to work, besides the fact that she might slap you in the face. But beyond that, it's also, you're not actually giving, you're just giving a piece of paper. You're really giving a shtar, you're really giving a document that represents money. So it could be that all coinages is like that, bismanazet, because it's not the value of the coin, it's actually just the guarantee of the U.S. government.
So why did you mention Pinyon Ben? That's usually silver dollars.
So Pinyon Ben is not such a great example. Pinyon Ben might be a good example, because even when you talk about silver dollars, those are all representative. You're not actually using real money. So with pennies, penny is not... Well, penny itself is not good enough for Pinyon Aben, but if you have, maybe you need to give a bucket of pennies in order to be Yotzei Pinyon Aben, as opposed to the other coins. Okay, anyways, so El Amar of Papa, Lu Nitzorcha El Lepachas Shavar Pruta, right? It's needed for robbery of less than a Shavar Pruta. So what is this idea of robbery of less than a Shavar Pruta? So you might say, who cares about robbery of less than a Shavar Pruta? So I'll give you two examples of something that might qualify as robbery of Pachas Shavar Pruta that people do all the time. One of them, both of them were quoted at different times. I've heard from Reb Shechter. They pointed out both of these things, but at different times. One is, if you jaywalk and therefore cause a car to slow down. So have you caused a loss to that car? You have, right? By you not following the law and jaywalking, causing someone else to slow down, right? That is possibly gezeila pachos mishavar pruta, right? You're causing them to lose something that is not really of value, but it is something that they're caused to lose. The other example that he gave once, and I don't know if this is really applicable to Zman Hazeh, but he suggested once that if you plug your cell phone in an airport or in any public place, you are in violation of gezeila pachos mishavar pruta. Right? He said, what do you mean? They have outlets there for people to use. So he said, no, they're not there for people to use. They're there for the vacuum people to be able to plug their vacuum cleaner in when they're vacuuming the floor. That's why they're there. So I think Bizman is, this is many years ago. I think Bizman is one can make the case that no, it's totally acceptable. Right, now there are ports, it's totally acceptable to do so. But you could come up with your own examples of these kinds of things, of what Gezeila Pachas Mishavar Pruta would be. So for a non-Jew to steal Pachas Mishavar Pruta, says the Gemara, they're actually Chayav Misa. They're actually Chayav death penalty. Now, it could be that that's only in the absence of another penalty. That the Torah employs these types of punishment. There is a question, actually, that it comes to a head during this week's Parsha. Was in this week's Parsha is the story with Shechem and Dina. Yeah. In this week's Parsha, so what do we have? We have Shimon and Levi going and destroying the entire city of Shechem. So what was their justification for killing the entire city of Shechem? So that's the machlokas between the Rambam and the Ramban. One of them, I didn't review this today, but one of them, the Ramban, I believe, says that they violated the prohibition of courts, that there were no courts set up in Shechem, which is why Shechem wasn't being brought to justice. If that's the case, setting up a court system is one of the Sheva Mitzvos B'nei Noach. If you are part of a society that has not set up a court system, you are in violation of one of the Sheva Mitzvos B'nei Noach. And what is the punishment for violating one of the Sheva Mitzvos B'nei Noach? Chayav Misa. So therefore, perhaps but it could be that if they do set up a court, does that court system have to be set up according to the Torah? So that's questionable. That's very questionable whether that would have to be. So as long as they set up some system of courts, so perhaps they are absolved from that Chayav Misa. So anyways, so El Amar Pavel Lunitzucha Ella. Again, so on that idea of stealing less than the Shavar Pruta, so Rashi makes the following comment. Rashi says here, sorry. So the Gemara continues on. Ihachi kusi b'Yisrael aser. If so, why does the Braisa say that a kusi against the Yisrael would then be aser? If it's less than a shear, right? Habar mechilahu. The Jew should give mechila. I mean, why is it that pachas mishav pruta stealing is okay amongst Jews? Or I'm sorry, okay, but is not punished amongst Jews. So the Gemara says, well, because they could give mechila. So the non-Jew also, if a non-Jew takes something that's pachas mishav pruta from a Jew, so say that he's being mocha, that he's giving in, that he doesn't care. So the Gemara says, nihi debaser hachi machale, that even though he pardons him afterwards, tsar b'shaisa milesle, did he not have anguish during the time of the robbery? He did feel pain during the time of the robbery. So therefore, the non-Jew caused him pain. The non-Jew is therefore going to be obligated for that pain, which in fact could lead to a chiyuv misa. But a Jew is not. So why is a Jew not? Right? So you can say, well, a Jew is mochel to another Jew. But the Jew could also be mochel to the non-Jew. Right? If it's just about mechila, so then the same Gemara should be raised. Did he not have tsar at the exact time? So it should be, it sounds, what should be the difference between non-Jews and Jews? So Rashi on that Gemara says, that Hilkach Gezel who Elishain based in Yisrael Niskakin Lashiv with the Basar Hachi Machale. Uvi Yisrael be Yisrael Nami Aser. Umaver lo Aver. But he doesn't violate the din. Why does he not violate the din? Dichsiv lo Tigzal. And then it also says, in Nekot's our Pasuk, it says, Fehishiv es HaGezela. It says, you're not allowed to steal. And it also says, you have to return the Gezela. So Amide Dehishavon Kari Gezel. So how do we define Gezel when it comes to Jews? We only define it as something which you can actually return. So with a Jew, because the Jew has a mitzvah of a heshivas hagazela, that defines the gazela. So if a Jew steals something which is not returnable, he has not actually violated gazela. Okay? V'idachlo, aval b'kusi, delabar yishavon, he's not someone who returns, shekol dino l'misa, but he gets a chiv misa, lo nafik pachas v'shavar pruta, michal pruta, v'afil v'yisrael d'machal le basar hachi. It doesn't, the less than a shavar pruta doesn't leave the statement of being of value, and even if the Jew, and even if the Jew is mochel him later on, the non-Jew has still established himself as a gazel. Okay, that is the that's what Rashi says here. So, what exactly is the idea of being? Why is it that pachas mishav pruta would then be permissible? So Rashi here said, well, because it's something that you haven't. It's something that is then going to be subject to the requirement of returning, and you're not going to be chayiv for returning it. So what is? But still. I mean, why not? So why not? Why do you not have to return it to a Jew? Why do you not have to return it to a Jew? So we already said, Rashi made a comment that you don't return it to the Jew because the Jew, or the Gemara itself, he made this comment, because the Jew is mochel it. What does it mean that he's mochel it?
He forgives it.
Right. So what if he doesn't forgive it? I'm not mochel. You took that jelly bean? I'm not mochel. There is a tape that my kids, that we listened to like in the car, when Zadie was young. You familiar with when Zadie was young?
Yeah.
You know it?
Yeah, I have it.
You have it. Okay, so there is a line in the middle where Zadie says, and I earned a penny or something. To which the kid says, a penny? You can't even buy a half-eaten Pashka's jelly bean for a penny. Right. So, but still, a person says, "I'm." So, a person takes a quarter of a Pashka's jelly bean, which is perhaps then less than a pruta. But the other person says, "I'm not mochel. You are not permitted to take it." So, does that have any standing? Does that have any standing? And what about if the person is lav bar mechole, a person who is not able to be mochel? So, who is a person that is not able to be mochel? A person who does not have das. Person who does not halachically have halachically recognized das. Who would be an example of somebody who does not have a halachically recognizable das?
An imbecile.
An imbecile. That's what you said? Yeah. A cheresh shoto or a katan. Those three individuals. So if you steal from those three individuals, how they could.
What was the first one?
A cheresh is a deaf person.
Deaf.
Right? Shota is a crazy person, and a child is a child. It's a little bit unclear what those definitions are. I mean, a cherish and a shota. Shachti used to explain it as a cherish is a person who doesn't know what's going on in the world. I mean, is that subjective or is that objective? A person who's a deaf. I mean, nowadays, a person might not hear, but they could be fully aware or fully cognizant of everything going on around them. So you're going to say that still that's the case, or is a chayrish just simply a person who does not have understanding of what's going on around him? And a shota would be somebody who's crazy. And he thinks he's Napoleon. He thinks he's something like that. That's what a chayrish and shota are. I'll save that perhaps for another time. So what are the possibilities? So there's three possibilities that he records here as to why a pachas mishavar pruta would be a person.
Something that has little value.
No value. Right, so can I plug this into your house? No, I mocked it. You cannot plug your cell phone into my house. So do I have the ability to say that? So one is the Machane Ephraim that says simply, it's based on Mechila. And the Machane Ephraim actually goes on and says that if you steal from a Chereshot of a Katan, guess what? You're Chayiv. The person has the ability. It's all based off of Mechila. And if the person isn't Mochel, or if the person is not able to be Mochel, the person is not able to give in and forgive on it, you're still going to be Chayiv. However, there are two other possibilities that are out there. Number one is the Rambam says. The Rambam says, "Ema b'toras hasheva gzela," that you're not. It's not included in the mitzvah of returning. It's just not in that connection that Rashi makes. And then the third thing that that is out there is a minchas chinuch that goes for the Magen Mishnah that it's based on the idea of chatzi shir. What does chatzi shir mean?
Half
of the shear.
Half of the amount.
Half of whatever the amount is. So chatzi shear shows up in many different mitzvahs. I mean, if I eat, I'm not allowed to eat a kezias of nevela, of non-kosher food. What about if I eat a half a kezias of a non-kosher food? Right? Or I'm not allowed to eat on Yom Kippur a kibitza. What if I eat half a kibitza? That's where the sugya is actually found. The sugya of chatzi shear by Yom Kippur. Or I'm not allowed to eat, or here, I'm not allowed to steal a pruta. What about stealing half of a pruta? So you suggest that, no, they're all usser, right? They're all still, they're just not going to be punished. So those are so that's what a chatzi shear is, that it's a prohibited object, a thing, but you're not going to be punished on it. So those are the three possibilities that are out there that seem to be brought down as to why it should be as to why it's not listed as being usser. But if that's the case, then you raise the question of, all right, so which one is it? Is it stealing or is it not stealing? So if you're going to come up with the idea that, well, therefore it's not really considered stealing, that it's not a shear, either it's not a mount or it's not payable back, etc., so then it's not an amount. So why should it be, so how does the prohibition work? So the way the Minchas Asher here explains it, that he points out that Rashi seems to say different things in different places, and Minchas Chinuch seems to say different things in different places, but the way he explains it is that it might be true that it's not an action of taking, that it's not an action of stealing, but you do potentially own pachas mishavar pruta. So the stealing, the action of taking something that somebody else owns is still gezela. Unless what? And therefore, for a non-Jew to take it, it would still be considered gezela, as opposed to a Jew who takes it. How does a Jew define the prohibition of gezela? Not of removing bailus from somebody else, but rather of what does one have to return to somebody else? So because you have the responsibility of returning it to somebody else, so it would not be subject to the full prohibition of gezela, because that's not the way that we we don't define it based on what a person owns, but rather what the mitzvah is of returning. All right, so there's obviously much more to be said on this. I only gave about one third of what his chapter is on the topic, but I will continue on with something else. Thank you.